today. I am here to give you the assurance that I have not forgotten you.
If we want to see the new evangelization become more than just jargon, if we want to see it grow legs and gain traction and change the world, we have got to take seriously our responsibilities as husbands and fathers, and especially as sons of God.
I want to propose to you then that something that our world is desperately in need of in the midst of this crisis is Catholic Christian masculinity.
If you want to be a good father, then bring your children to confession with you.
I can't get there unless I become a man of ascesis, a man of asceticism, a man of training.
A man not doing penance, a man not disciplined, is not a man.
You guys have upped your game.
You know what, guys, I gotta say, I love this the concept of Man Show.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with Farmer Dave. It's good to have you on your show.
Thank you. Glad I was invited back.
We're again, once again, without Juan. I didn't mean to say his name so like downwardly, like Juan. Like
Juan.
It's his fault.
Once again, without Juan.
Jim is going to be back soon. Talk to him at Mass today. He said Easter he's going to be back.
Yeah, he's out of town right now. He's in Houston.
Houston, yeah. Or somewhere.
Somewhere.
Sorry,
he might be at home. He could be.
Sorry, Jim.
Nobody knows.
So
one thing you don't want to do is break into a bodyguard's house.
That is a fool's errand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get broke.
Or something.
Or something.
Something happens.
Right. Sure. Something happens.
So one of the things that I've been wanting to do for a while on the Catholic Man Show, and I just forgot, you know, it's we're actually coming into spring. You know, springtime
is
here.
It's here.
Through wintertime, I always love drinking a nice glass of port.
Mm.
And I bought this bottle of port months ago, like in preparation for to have it on the show. It's like cold, fire's going, pour a nice glass of port.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I mean, just rings.
Totally.
And it's
delicious.
And it's delicious. And I forgot about it.
So, you know, like, there are some people who don't like port, and I say, get out.
I can't do that because my wife doesn't like port.
She does like it. She just doesn't want to drink as much as I do.
She'll take a sip. She likes.
But there are people who say they just don't like it. And to those people, get out.
Just stop listening.
That's what I say. Get out.
Yeah.
Please.
Wherever you are.
Yeah.
If you're out,
just
then get in. I don't care.
Or get further out. Yeah. I don't know. So it's port. It's like, what do you not like? Dessert.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand some people.
So this one is Wars Warrior. It's a Porto, Finest Reserve. And it is delicious. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
Gosh, it is good.
So it says Warrior is a rich, full-bodied port that has been matured in their cellars to a mellow balance of wild red fruit flavors, supported by a spicy and elegant tannins. With a long and satisfying finish, Wars Warrior is delicious served at the end of a meal with rich desserts, strong cheese, or on the Catholic Man Show podcast.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's like, I'm sitting here going like, gosh, I don't know if you can actually drink this in Exodus 90 because you have to relax not only drinking alcohol, but also sweets. This is so delicious.
It is very good. Dave, so another thing that we're doing, I wanted to, I just briefly brought it up to you right before we started the show, but
yes.
So maybe somebody of you heard a couple of weeks ago, we had Ambrosian Candle Company as they had a commercial on the Catholic Man Show, and recently we partnered with them. Ambrosian Candle Company it's 100% beeswax candles, made by a good, strong Catholic family, and ambrosiancandles.com is the website.
How do you spell ambrosian?
A-M-B-R-O-S-I-A-N.
Ambrosian.
It's like St. Ambrose.
Yeah.
But we partnered up with them, and so what we're going to do, you see these on YouTube, but they are tapered candles, 10-inch tapered candles, prayer candles, 100% beeswax, and we're offering for the next 50 new patrons of $10 or more a month for the Catholic Man Show, we're going to ship you two of these ambrosian candles to put on your home altar, to put, you know, to be able to pray with your family, to use them. You know, we've talked about on our show many times, and even in our book. You know, when you're praying together as a family, the more smells and bells you can add to the family prayer life is always a good thing, because it incorporates more of the family and more senses and engages especially the little kids, right?
Yeah.
Fire is very mesmerizing regardless of your age. But
true. Those are beautiful candles.
They're beautiful candles. Ambrosiancandles.com is their website. But if you want to get two of them for free as a thank you gift, you can go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow and become a patron of $10 or more a month. So they're pure beeswax. They harvest the honey themselves.
Yeah, so they're
wax themselves.
They're husbands. They're husbandry of the honey hive.
Yes. And you know, 100% beeswax, so they're going to burn brighter. They're going to burn slower.
Yeah,
They burn a long time. They're more liturgically fitting.
Mm-hmm. They also have a nice sweet smell. Mm-hmm. Like they're not scented.
Mm-hmm.
Just a natural beeswax smells good when you burn it.
Mm-hmm. So for the next 50, I don't know how long it'll take us to get an extra 50 patrons. But if you've been thinking about supporting the show, you can go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, $10 more a month. We'll send you two of those, and they're beautiful.
You know, bees and the liturgy is actually a fascinating history. We don't have time to get into it, but there are many, many people for hundreds and hundreds of years have been drawing the correlation between like the cooperative work of a beehive and all the bees and what takes place in the liturgy. And so
talk about it in Compline.
Yeah. And so this candle right here, that is probably the work of at least 1,000 bees over a summer.
Wow.
Or more. But it's just amazing, all of the work. Mm. And beeswax is an incredible substance.
Well, we love partnering with good Catholic families with, you know, starting little, you know, small businesses. And so it was great, an opportunity for us to partner with Ambrosian Candles. And, you know, hopefully we can get a couple more patrons. All the money that we have that we go from Patreon, it all goes back into the show.
Correct.
So like, the reason why we're able to do this is because the people have sponsored our show anyway. So anyway, I would strongly encourage, when you have family prayer together, to light a candle before you start praying.
It really does.
It really sets the tone, the ambiance.
And it just establishes a change, right?
Mm-hmm.
It almost creates a new setting.
Yeah.
It's just really good to have this physical thing you do. And I like to do the same thing at meals, right? You sit down at the table.
Yeah, you guys are really good at that,
and,
too.
And yeah, we lighting candles during dinner. There's just something about it that changes kind of the nature of the environment,
mm-hmm.
right? And certainly, there's something about lighting a candle, especially for prayer, that kind of draws your mind into. There's something like peaceful or like centering. The candle like focuses your attention, and you stop. I don't know. It like kind of prevents distractions.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of reasons why candles are great when you pray.
Yeah, without a doubt. Can I give an update on Compline?
Yes. Prayer? Oh, yeah. Please do.
You know, so one of the things that we did as a family is we started praying Compline together at the end of the evening. Compline is the last prayer of the Liturgy of the Hours. You know that monks pray typically, but laity is encouraged to pray as well. And so one of the things we did as a practice for Lent with our family, I've talked about before, is we pray Compline together. And again, I said this before, but it's worth saying again. You know, it's tough at the beginning, right? You try to figure it out. You're going back and forth with one another. Who takes what? You know, and there's certain parts that you don't say right now because it has alleluia in it, the A word.
Bro.
I know, sorry. No, sorry.
Gosh, dude.
So you have to like, you know, there's certain parts that you don't say. So it takes a little bit to get into the rhythm. We're what? 3 weeks in, I guess. How long are we into Lent? About 3-4 weeks?
I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about Exodus 90.
When you do Exodus 90, yeah. It's like, I don't know when Lent started.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But they have almost memorized all of Compline.
That doesn't surprise me.
Like first almost of all, the whole
it's
thing.
It's not too long. It's like, I think it's the shortest of all of the hours. I'm pretty sure it's the shortest.
Okay.
It's not like it's just like...
Sext is pretty short, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I could be wrong. For some reason, though, I was thinking Compline was the shortest one. But still.
It's pretty impressive. Because
kids can just memorize stuff.
You know, it's multiple... It's many verses in the Psalms, right? That you're praying the Psalms. And then on top of that, you know, you're praying Hail Holy Queen. You're praying a lot of prayers. You know, the Angelus, that you want them to get into a rhythm of praying anyway.
Yeah.
So it's been such a great practice. I've been really pleased with it, even though with the rough start.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I mean, and they like I said, they have it basically memorized. I saw Jude the other day, like he has this book and he just kind of set it down.
Yeah.
And I was like about to get onto him, but then I waited to see what would happen. Turns out, like basically,
he knew it.
Yeah. Basically, had all memorized.
Oh, Dad, you don't know it?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, I don't. I've not memorized it all. But anyway. So, we're going to talk about chivalry today. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So, raise your glass.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan.
It hits all the stuff. I was trying not to laugh about that as we were coming back in.
Does it all this? We're just
like, man, we are so descriptive, like we are so articulate, like it just hits the stuff.
Over the break, we were talking about a local winery here that's really good. It's, you know, it's like, it's not a cheap place is what we were saying, but you know, you get what you pay for is so good, and you know, just it's locally made. It's like, and I said it hits all the stuff about like local.
And then he started the show.
Good. Other stuff,
and
you know, it hits it
as such,
and yada yada.
Yeah.
So anyway, only farming update I have is we have chicks that should be hatching this week, which is very exciting.
Awesome.
We have a broody hen. She's sitting on 6 eggs. I did a flashlight test the other day, and only 5 of them are like, I think maybe one of them. The chicks, the chickens, they'll like, find an egg and like bring it with them. When a hen gets broody, she wants to sit on the eggs. She will get up once a day to relieve herself and eat and drink once, a little bit, and then go sit back on the nest for the rest of the day. Sometimes when she's up, if she sees another egg, she'll like pick it up and take it with her. They can like hold it underneath their beak and kind of walk with it. And she's like, now you're my egg. And so I think one got added in there. So anyway, we've got 5 eggs that should be hatching this week. So it's pretty exciting.
Always exciting on the farm.
Because I don't believe...
On the
like,
ranch. Is it a ranch?
We call it Niles Ranch. Yeah.
Yeah.
some people, you know, you can order chicks and that's fine. It's like, it's really it's pretty cheap, you know, no pun intended. But the thing is, like, I don't want to care for chicks. It's smelly. You have to keep them inside or at least in the garage for like weeks. And it's like, no, I have chickens. Why am I sitting here like raising chicks when I have chickens? So that's just kind of my philosophy is that, like, I'm not going to raise chickens. The chickens will raise the chickens. And yes, I understand it will be less successful. You know, like,
it's a price I'm willing to pay.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, I don't want to do it.
That's a Shrek, like Shrek. You know, the people that I'm going to, they're like about to go to the war, and it's like, the people I'm about to have killed, I'm willing to sacrifice this.
So my five chicks, like, maybe only two will make it. We'll see. But hey,
but it's a price you're willing to pay.
Still. We got baby chicks coming. That's all I got. So, anything else?
Let's go.
So, I want to talk about chivalry today. Everything...
A lost virtue.
Yes. Everything I'm pulling from today is from a book entitled Chivalry, An Ideal Whose Time Has Come Again by George of Cappadocia.
Yeah, he's... if you're on X, he's a phenomenal...
Are we really doing that? Are we really, like... We're really calling it X?
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, because that's what it is.
I know, but... It's dumb.
So
I just am not over.
Well, just go ahead and
I'm just not over it.
Elon.
I think Elon is like amazing, but I don't like the name. What are you? Are you Xing? Like you used to say, oh, I'm tweeting.
You're posting. You post.
Yeah. See, and it just.
But he's a great follow. Chivalry Guild at Chivalry Guild. So you should go follow him.
Yeah, and so this is actually a publication of the Chivalry Guild.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. That's like...
Well played. Marketing-wise, indeed. 100%.
And so I was really inspired by this book because as I was reading it, I became aware at the deficiency of my own understanding of chivalry. Right away. He addressed the things that it's like, oh, okay, I guess like... Yes, that is, he would say, like, a lot of people think about chivalry as this. And I was thinking, yeah.
That's what it is.
I think I'm one of those people. Isn't that what it is? And he's like, and then, you know, very quickly opened up my perspective into, actually, no.
So what did you think it was?
You know, it's the being polite, respecting women, you know, holding the door for them, giving up your seat. You know, just doing that, like...
And those are, like, direct examples he talks about in the book.
Yeah, and those things certainly are chivalrous. But that is... Those things are not what chivalry is. And that's... Those things aren't what make you chivalrous. Okay. There is a higher calling to the man of chivalry. The chivalric duty transcends simply giving up your seat or opening a door. As lovely and respectful as those things are. Basically all of the quote, everything we talk about today is going to be a quote from his book.
Except for the things that we don't quote.
Yeah, exactly. And then some of the other things, he quotes C.S. Lewis in here a lot. So I'm going to start off with...
He also is a big fan of The Peepster.
Definitely. He's a huge Peepster fan. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another plus for him.
So he's, you know, he's like, can't be that bad of a guy.
Right.
You know? But C.S. Lewis says that the essence of the ideal about chivalry is the double demand it makes on our human nature, that man be both ferocious and gentle.
You know what this reminded me of? Meekness.
Yes.
It reminded me very much of meekness. It's like strength under control.
There is he has a long section on meekness in the book.
Okay.
Yeah, where he talks about that, because... Meekness and chivalry have a lot in common, you know, about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the distinctions are.
Well, chivalry goes beyond meek. Okay. It's chivalry is like sort of a broad, it's an ideal to strive for, almost like a way of life, more than one specific thing. It's the way you view your purpose in life, the way it's... we were talking about it before the show, and I was saying that to me, it's almost like it's the male version of virtue. That chivalry is, it's my opinion that women are not called to chivalry. Men are called to chivalry, and it's the male expression of all the virtues. So it actually encompasses everything, and that's why it's an ideal to strive for. Because, and he says early on in the book that no one really ever, you don't ever get there, right? It's because it's always, there's always more, right? You could always become holier. You could always become more virtuous. So that's kind of what it is. But I love this, the idea that C.S. Lewis brings up about the competition between ferocity and gentleness. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't think about the virtuous man being ferocious. But I think he makes a good point here that, well,
yeah, I mean,
that's because you don't think about it.
Right. In spiritual warfare, I mean, the virtuous man is ferocious. Right? In spiritual warfare, it's fighting the spiritual battles.
Totally. And so he makes a long point, like half of the book is about fighting battles, and about becoming the kind of man who is prepared to fight. Not because you want to fight, but I am ready and willing at all moments to defend the innocent, to stand up for justice and goodness. And I will not stand idly by. I will not be the man who does nothing. I will be the man that, at the end of my life, can say, I stood up, you know, I did something through charity, mm-hmm. Justice, you know, all of the good things. So he says that chivalry is tested every day when a man decides to train and prepare to become someone evildoers would rather avoid.
Yeah, this is one of those, man, I can't remember if it was like St. John Vianney or something like that, you know. Oh, I think actually in C.S. Lewis talks about this. He says, you know, you want to be the, when you die, you want both the angels and the demons to rejoice, right? You know, the angels to rejoice, bringing you up to heaven, like yeah. That you're there, and the demons to say, good, I'm glad he's out of the battle.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad he's not here anymore.
Yeah. I think that may have been, that's, I don't know. I
like
think
that.
It is.
I like that. So he says that the chivalric virtues, also the word chivalric, just a great
chivalric.
Yeah, it's a great word. The chivalric virtues capture the excellences particular to an aristocratic fighting man. And so these are, I want to go through this list here that he has. It's prowess, courtesy, honor, generosity, loyalty, and faith. Okay. So let's start with prowess. He says that the knight fights or stands ready to should a fight be forced upon him. So what he's talking about by prowess is really your ability, your physical strength, and it's not a metaphor. He's really talking about your physical training and your knowledge of combat, that you are actually a man who has prepared yourself to have a physical altercation with somebody should the need arise.
Okay. Do you think you could also just take this as metaphorically, also with the spirituality aspect?
There is certainly a spiritual aspect to it, no doubt. But in there, which we'll get to, so one of the things he says about that comparison, because in today's modern era, and I had, like, this was totally me, and reading this book is, like, one of the things that made me say, like, you know what? And it's not that that's not true about the spiritual component about, okay, I'm ready to do spiritual battle. But I think that we need to be honest about, well, there is this other side, because we are not just spirits. We are a body and a spirit. And so both, our spirit can't act without our body. Our body can't act without our spirit. And so you can't really divide these things. You have to embrace both at the same time. But I need, if I'm going to have prowess, it needs to be physical and spiritual. So we'll get to this on the other side of the break.
We'll be right back.
Lent is a time of great renewal. God calls us into uncommon freedom in Jesus Christ, but many obstacles stand in our way. Lent provides us with a time to enter into the spiritual battle. We must face God's enemies, the demons who tempt us to fall into sin. We must also face up to our own weakness and all that holds us back from entering into God's promises. If Lent has been underwhelming thus far for you, I recommend Lent with Exodus, with new features like Teach Me to Pray, weekly spiritual guides with Father Boniface Hicks, and Praying for the Dead on Mondays with men from all over the world. Lent with Exodus will provide structure and order during this penitential season. A 14-day free trial for all new users. Go to download.exodus90.com or search for Exodus 90 in the App Store.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm here with David Niles. One of the things about growing in virtue is that you end up knowing thyself better and better. Dave comes over for a baby bottle to my house, and the first thing he says, he's like, Juan and I are sitting there in the kitchen, and he comes walking in and goes, you know what, I've come to a realization about myself. Juan and I are both like wide-eyed, like wondering, like, okay. And Dave says, I've come to the realization that I have strong opinions about things.
And I think I'm always right.
And Juan and I like looked at each other like, okay, like thinking this is a punchline or a joke or like, yeah. Like, yeah, we have known this.
Where's the funny part?
Yeah. But turns out Dave just like wanted to make sure we all knew that Dave has opinions and they're strong.
I think stuff.
And he thinks he's right.
And the things I think, they're gold.
I can't tell you
and
how.
I'm just giving them away for free here on the show.
Juan and I laughed about that excessively for the week afterwards about how Dave just came
sometimes,
to the realization.
Yeah, sometimes I come on a little. I come off. You know, it's just too strong. Just too strong. Can a man be too strong? Like, I think I'm too strong.
Oh, I will forever remember that moment.
It's like, this is like Remember the Titans. Yeah. How strong are you? I'm too strong.
That's such a great movie.
That is a great movie. I love that movie. I haven't seen it forever. So I want to get back to this idea about body and soul. Before yes. I do, I want to just read this. Holding doors open for ladies is easy. Becoming formidable is not. Anyone who can't or won't fight isn't chivalrous. No matter how big his heart or refined his manners. Not that he should go looking for scuffles, but we must not flinch when they come our way. So his point is that if you don't have, if you can't,
very analogous to the spiritual life.
Yeah, there is certainly, yeah, if you can't fight that battle too, you're also not chivalrous. But he says also that chivalry dismisses the false dichotomies which tell us that moral and physical excellence are mutually exclusive. So
excuse me, sorry.
He's saying that you can't, and I think we do have a tendency to overemphasize the spiritual excellence. You know, oh, it's just about
really. I think in today's world,
I think in the in certain Catholic world.
Okay.
No, not in the world. I just mean like in the Catholic.
Okay.
You know, there is
sort of say I like
no. You get outside the Catholic world, it's totally the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, it's all body.
There is, yeah, exactly. It's all body.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to, in order to avoid, you know, because the virtue is the middle road, okay? Mm-hmm. So we can't ignore either one.
Right.
So if you think that you want to pursue spiritual excellence, you must simultaneously pursue physical excellence. That your spirit is... If your body is weak, your spirit will be weak.
Is that like St. Paul? Flesh is willing? Or your spirit is willing, but your flesh is weak?
Yeah. I mean, that's you could use that as a good example. But it's just true that because we're a body-soul composite, you can't do your spirit. Like I said earlier, your spirit can't do anything without your body. Your body can't do anything without your spirit. So you have
it can,
to...
It can die.
You have to do... Well, okay. Great. There's one... Okay, we came up with one thing. So...
You're rubbing off on me. Just, like I'm starting to like come up with actually.
Another thing he says in here, which I want to get, which I feel like you're going to like, is he says prowess starts with the simple and wholesomeness of having and admiring heroes. Mm-hmm. That in order to pursue this, because it's a daunting thing, like the idea that I am the man who's going to to fill the gap.
Yeah.
And it might cost me my life, and that I'm willing to lay it down even for like to something that might seem like it's not worth it.
And this makes sense, right? This is why Marvel movies are always so big. This is why football like players are always so big, like sports figures are always so big, and because like people are yearning, they see some kind of physical excellence and say like, oh, I want to be that.
Yeah,
you know, that's something that I admire. I admire this aspect of this person. It can obviously go too far, but I mean, you can always, obviously, just from our human nature, we're always looking to other people, and this is the importance of communion. I mean, we talk about friendship there, but and the like, and how Christ is the perfect manifestation of this, like looking to him as the perfect example. But like just by nature, we're always looking towards the higher good.
Yeah, exactly. And having those heroes, which for us as Catholics is a second nature, you know, when we have the saints.
Yes.
And so that's why, especially the, in my opinion, the lives of the martyrs, it's so important, I think, to know the martyrs, because they're the ones who gave everything, you know, in a very unique and like outward way.
White martyrdom or red martyrdom?
I'm talking about red martyrdom.
Okay.
White martyrdom is cool too, but red, like, I think especially for the purposes of our conversation today, I'm talking about like red.
I mean,
martyrs.
this is what Bishop Olmsted talked about, like into his apostolic exhortation into the breach, right? This is why it resonated with so many men, and this is why it was something that men gravitated towards, and it was so successful, is because we are called, you know, to fight for the good. There's good in this life, and it's worth fighting for, you know, as Tolkien would say, you know, and so like. Deep down, like, we want to fight for the good. Like, we want to stand up for the vulnerable. We want to stand up for those who like, we feel like are less, have less ability than what we do. And so we want to stand up for them by our natural instinct, right? And so it makes sense that prowess has to be, like, if we're going to do that, if this is what, like, your natural instinct is to do, you want to be ready to do it.
And, you know, the idea of prowess is innate in men. You know, we earlier this year we read the Iliad and the Odyssey, and one of the things that by Homer, right? In the Iliad, there is an idea of sort of like the idea of virtue is this kind of in its infancy, and at the time the what they call arete, or is like human excellence, they only talked about it and refer to your prowess, your ability, your skill in battle, right? Oh, you killed how many people, okay? And I only bring that up because I think it's just a natural part of men,
right,
that we have this desire for excellence in a like a physical way, like this. Like, yes, I have the ability to like hold my own, defend myself, defend my country, you know, whatever. You know, I can stop you if you're, what you're doing is wrong. And there's just a nobility, right, that I think really does speak to the heart of, you know, like if you're if your heart is pumping, like you should feel something about that. And that idea of prowess is going to continue on as he moves through the other virtues, because he starts with that one for a reason. So he's going to move on to courtesy, which is, you know, that a man treats others with thoughtfulness and grace is what he says.
It's like manners.
Right. So he quotes C.S. Lewis again. He says, to be a man of both hardihood and good manners. This is the double demand of chivalry that makes the knight a work of art. And he says, courtesy is the outward display of a noble soul. Even if we could find a good manual on etiquette, we should turn to it last rather than first. Courtesy requires us to mind the details, but we cannot skip straight from them. We cannot skip straight to them before establishing the personal frame which gives meaning and effect to everything a man does. Knowledge of the rules does little good without a few prerequisites, which he says are energy, attentiveness, and decisiveness. So what he's trying to say is that if you're a low energy, like, kind of guy who's just, you're not fit, you're not able to present yourself or be like, if you have two people, one person is like there's something, he has an energy and a presence to him. Like, he's really here and he's right there before you. And he is energetically being courteous. And then another man who just simply doesn't break any, like, he just doesn't have bad manners, right? There's nothing that you could say that was like uncourteous about him, right? But there's a distinct difference here, that the man of energy, the man who's like, because he comes, he's starting off with that prowess, it amplifies his courtesy as well and makes him like able to like have more of himself to give. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, I think so.
Okay.
So I'm a guy who, like, I feel like I'm always wanting more energy. I always feel like, man, I just wish I had just a little bit more energy. Maybe that's just like my state in life because I have five children.
Right.
And that I'm always in a job and, like, I don't know.
Yeah. So,
like,
okay. I'm glad you said that, because I do not think he's talking about like, oh, I shouldn't be tired. Because I think what he's saying here is that the man of energy, he might be tired, but he has the ability to like rouse himself and be energetic. There are some people who are just, because they just live a sedentary life, I think, they just simply don't have the capability of rousing themselves to this like level in order to come, like, sort of like a performance, you know, that you're like, now is the time for me to rise and be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, this is the attack of the noonday devil.
A little bit of that. We'll be right back.
I'm going to drink a lot of port and slay the noonday devil.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. David Niles here with Adam Minahan. What segment is this?
Four.
This is number four?
Yes. I brought us in talking about you having strong opinions.
Oh, that's right. We are not going to get through all of this. That's okay. So this is also one, Adam, that when I came to this, I thought, oh, Adam's going to really like this.
Ooh. Okay.
He says, this is still under the category of courtesy. He says,
so we're talking about chivalry.
We're talking about chivalry. Yes. Yep. A man's appearance is loaded with implication. However, adamantly, we insist otherwise. Knightly presentation aims at the golden mean between the excess of dandyism and the deficiency of slovenliness.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. I know, like, you're big on decorum.
I am. Yeah, I am, because, you know, okay, so I think decorum falls under the virtue of religion, which falls under the virtue of justice. Justice is something that you have to give to what is due. Religion is something that you have to give to God, what he is due, and decorum is something that you have to show both inwardly and outwardly the right way of presenting oneself to worship in religion, out of justice to God, mm-hmm. who is your creator and the source of all goodness.
Yeah, and there is these days this idea of like, oh, if you're focusing on your appearance, obviously it means you're vain. And if you're vain...
Are those the ones who think their song is about them?
Yeah. The same ones, actually. Okay. And to be sure, you could be vainly doing that.
Sure.
But that's not what we're talking about here, okay? And so I think there's a pushback against that. It's like, oh, you just shouldn't focus on your appearance because I don't want to be vain. But that's not the virtue either. The virtue actually is because when you focus on your appearance, it's about others.
Well, this is why I said both inwardly and outwardly, right? It's like the outwardly appearance of a sacrament is important because it's it's the outward, the manifestation of what's happening internally, right?
Right.
Like from the inside. So like the problem is like you don't show up in a suit to go work out unless you're a weirdo. You don't show up in a suit to go to the swimming pool.
Right.
Right. And it's because,
or like, when I meet with a client, I don't wear a suit because I want to show off. I wear a suit in order to show respect
and honor
to the client that I'm meeting with.
Right.
Like the dress shoes I'm wearing is not for me.
Right.
I would much rather wear boots or tennis shoes or mm-hmm. something else.
Mm-hmm.
I wear it for them.
Right.
And so, and that's the point, is that our appearance, it's courtesy or even charity, right? That you want to show that you are this, like, the man. Everything about what you're doing needs to be that I am the man of virtue and I'm here for you, okay? And it's not about me, but it's, you know, in this case, your appearance is always about them. So let's see. Let's move on to honor.
Okay.
Ron Swanson says,
ooh, the famous philosopher.
Yes, he says, anyone needing it defined doesn't have it. Which I think is true.
Like, what happened? What do you think has happened in today's culture where honor has been so belittled?
I don't know. Because it's gotten to the point where it's not even attacked anymore. It's just gone. The concept of it in young people, like, nobody thinks about, or certainly no one talks about, like, their honor.
Right.
That, like, honor compels me.
Or their family's honor.
Or my family's honor, right. That's just it's a foreign concept.
You know
to
what?
People.
What struck me not too long ago is I was talking to a good friend of mine, and he had recently lost his job, and he was talking to me about it, and he was asking for counseling. He goes like, "Well, I just got let go. How do I tell my parents?" I was like, well, "What do you mean? You tell them like I got let go?" And he was like, "Well, people are going to know this, and my last name is their last name. They're going to find out about it. And so, like, how do I do this without dishonoring my parents?" And like, I thought, like, wow, that's very interesting. Like that, that you're so self aware of, like,
what a chivalric thought.
Yeah, to say like, listen, I don't want to do damage to my parents' name based off of something. And it wasn't that he got let go for any reason. Like, it wasn't like. Like malpractice or anything like that. I mean,
sure.
It was just like it was just a tough situation.
But
within
still,
the company.
There is something about that. Like, oh, because the thought is I wasn't good enough. You know,
right.
That's why. Like, I got like. I mean, right. And that's not.
That wasn't it.
It's not.
But
true,
just the
probably,
thought process of like, I like something bad happened to me, and like not thinking about me, but thinking about like
my family name.
My family name, and I thought like, man, that is just something that
it's a very pious of him.
It was like that's just something that. Is so lost in our culture today.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So I don't know what happened, because World War II, like that generation, they still had honor. It seemed like.
Yeah.
I wasn't around.
It seems like they did.
It seems like that they did.
I think it was the 70s, man. I think in the
70s. I just 70s, like get so tired of blaming everything on the late 60s and 70s.
But that's when it all, I mean, a lot of stuff, I don't know if like if it was their fault. But that's when a lot of it happened, okay? That's when a lot of it, the sexual revolution really did destroy the fabric of, like, a lot of our culture, a lot of the good things about our society. I mean, not like there were problems, but before that, but still.
Yeah, like, she ate the apple, or she ate the fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
And he allowed it.
Oh, man. So, George of Cappadocia. I love that that's the name of his author's name. When he's talking about honor, he sums it up this way. Don't disgrace yourself. And it's like, yes, okay, that's a very simple way to think about it. Just don't disgrace yourself. A man of quality should feel in his bones that a certain conduct is beneath him.
Yeah.
Think about that. It's like,
I mean, this is what I'm trying to teach my kids all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like my oldest is like, set the example. There are certain things that kids do, you know, that you should not do because you're older than them.
Yeah.
You should not go down. This is the whole problem with, I think, modernity, is that we're always looking downwards instead of upwards. We're always like saying like, oh, well, the animals are doing certain things. And so like, it should be a natural thing mm-hmm. for humans to do this. It's like, no, we should be looking upwards.
Right.
Like, this is the first time in human history, I think, that we're looking,
we want to be like the animals?
We're descending, yeah. like instead of ascending.
Well, maybe, I don't know if it's the first time, but it does seem like that's what's happening.
Yeah.
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 So, and he also talks about magnanimity, which obviously— Greatness of soul. He says, a magnanimous man has the boldness to seek great things and make himself worthy of them.
Yeah.
And then he goes through like—
That's Pieper.
Yeah. Joseph Pieper. And he talks about how pride, you know, versus magnanimity. A lot of people are kind of, they shy away from that idea of magnanimity because they're afraid it's a prideful. It sounds like pride.
Right.
But it isn't. We've done a whole episode on magnanimity. You can go back and listen to
it. A couple times.
He also talks about how honor always seeks a worthy opponent, which I thought was very
like, honorable.
A very interesting thing about, he actually quotes Nietzsche. Pummeling a weak opponent is simply beneath those with an honorable nature because there's nothing to be won in such an unequal contest. And it's like a lot of these things, like, yeah, totally. Just never really thought about that very much. He talks about generosity, but let's skip that and go to loyalty.
You're not going to give generosity its due?
I think that it's like, yeah, they're generous. Excellence in giving.
In time, talent, and treasure.
Since we only have a little bit of time left.
Okay.
I want to talk about loyalty. So of all the chivalric virtues, loyalty clashes hardest with the spirit of our age because it poses the most fundamental threat to the modern man's quasi-sacred commitment to maximal choice at every moment.
Yeah, I mean, loyalty to me is so tough now. I don't know what has happened in modern like times with loyalty, but it just has been lost, right? Even in the business world. It's like you used to have loyalty to a company. The company would repay you by being loyal to you, not letting you go, hiring within, moving you up the chain of command, so to speak. And you'd be, you could actually go from, pushing the broom to a higher level executive position, in 30 years or whatever. Same way with even sports. It used to be like a guy would start, his professional career with the Dallas Cowboys and want to stay with the Dallas Cowboys his whole professional career.
Well, he actually tells the story of Pat Tillman.
Yeah.
Rest
in peace.
Played at Arizona or Arizona State. I don't remember.
Yeah, Arizona State.
And he was too small, not fast enough. No, so like nobody thought, oh, he's not going to be good in the pros. But he, entered the draft and was picked in the last round by the Arizona Cardinals
mm-hmm.
because they thought, okay, this is a local guy. Maybe we can get some play. But he was just the guy who was like, oh, no, no one is going to work harder than me.
He's the Rudy Rudiger.
Totally, he is.
Yeah.
So anyway, he ended up starting in his first mm-hmm. game on 9/11. And so after his 3-year contract was up, somebody offered him $9.2 million.
That's a lot of money.
The Cardinals offered him the league minimum, $512,000. And he stayed with the Cardinals. He gave up $9.2 million and took $512,000 because he said, these are the guys who gave me a shot when nobody else would.
Well, then he ended up going...
And then after 9/11, he dropped out of the NFL to go join the military to defend his homeland, what he viewed as defending his homeland. I mean, it's like everything about that guy's life... He ended up dying. Everything about his life was loyalty, loyalty, loyalty. I mean, this... If you want, like, a hero to look up to, you could do a lot worse than Pat Tillman. He's got problems, too, I'm sure. Nobody's perfect, but he's got so much to look at, too. Anyway, there's more we're going to keep talking about on the other side. Go check out the podcast. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Man, I didn't know Pat Tillman's story.
Oh, you didn't?
I didn't.
I remember when it happened.
Yeah, and it was sad because he ended up getting killed by friendly fire, yeah. And they tried to cover it up.
Yeah,
and then they actually got caught and admitted, yeah, we tried to cover it up because he was the highest profile dude in the military. Yeah, because he's Pat Tillman. He left the NFL.
They had bombs from a plane rated down.
Yeah,
right where he was.
I mean, it was an accident, but still,
it wasn't good.
It was not. Yeah, it was definitely bad. But just think about that.
I just don't think, I don't even know how to rebuild loyalty in a culture without being in a high place in, either business or a high influential person in society. Because what happens is in a low, the low society, the guys who are starting from the very beginning, from at the very beginning of their, career or whatever. They try to give loyalty, right? And they constantly get pushed down.
Yeah, I guess they do. I mean, I'm sure some of them do. I don't even know.
At least maybe.
I think in these days,
the people
in a career,
that I hang out with, they do.
The wisdom, conventional wisdom today is that
if you can make another dime,
that's exactly right.
Go somewhere else.
And so that's why I love Pat Tillman's story about it. He turned down $9.2 million. For loyalty, for the sake of loyalty. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have stories like this, and we have to tell stories like this that show. And maybe people will still say that was a dumb thing to do. A lot of people are going to say,
almost everybody,
that's a dumb thing to do. There's a large portion of me that says that was a dumb thing to do. There is a small portion of me that really admires him for it.
I wouldn't do it.
I don't think I would have either. But I'm saying there is still there's something about it that it's like, wow, talk about countercultural.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So.
I also got problems.
Right. Another thing he talks about in here is loyalty to place.
Now, this is something I want to do a whole episode on.
The idea of stability.
Yeah.
The virtue of stability.
I really want to have a whole episode on stability.
Yeah. He says that the chivalrous man loves the soil itself, as well as the people, customs, institutions, traditions, and history. He doesn't overlook flaws, but neither does he meet them with the facile critiques of an undergrad.
I love that.
It's first of all, a lot of his vocabulary and language in the book is
awesome.
It's what a punchy way to say it, right?
Yeah.
And then so once again, he quotes C.S. Lewis. He says that the feelings about home must have been quite different in the days when a family had fed on the produce of the same few miles of country for six generations.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talks a lot about planting trees where you live. And then about almost like when you plant a tree, he says it's almost like you're harvesting time itself. Like that you're letting none of it be wasted. Because the tree is just growing all the time, right? And it's not going to stop. And that when you do things like that, it makes it harder to leave. When you pour yourself into the place that you live. This is why I'm such a big proponent of doing as much as you... doing stuff yourself.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has a different, amount, a skill level, right? But... just don't call somebody to fix something just because it's broken. I mean, with YouTube these days, you can fix it. By the time I left my last house, across the street here, I was like, man, I put in that garage door, I changed the siding, I redid the bathroom, I redid the kitchen, I retextured the, mm-hmm. I was able to look around, and there was a deep satisfaction
mm-hmm.
in knowing that I had, it had my fingerprint, and I had put myself into this place. It wasn't just a house that I lived in that I just bought from somebody.
Yeah.
It became my house.
Right. Now it's definitely not.
Well, now it's somebody else's house. But I still put that siding up, okay? So then he goes on to talk about faith, obviously, how which is important. Otherwise, you don't really have chivalry. You have a very well-mannered gentleman. Possibly, right? He talks about chivalry and the knight a lot. And he does that, I think, on purpose to try to like inspire you, right? To call, to summon up this nascent manhood in you that has been oppressed by modern life. And so faith obviously is very, very important, because that's what orients all of these virtues to their ultimate good. Okay. That's what it is. It is faith that takes these from just being a natural virtue into a supernatural virtue, which we've talked about before on the show. But just for the sake of time, I want to get to his six proposals to revive knightly spirit in the church.
Okay.
Number one, elevate attire at Holy Mass.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about it already. A sharp appearance conveys purpose and respect, in addition to reinforcing that state in our hearts and reminding us that we are at Mass for a reason. You know, when you dress up for Mass, it sets it apart.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that says, oh, I'm not just going to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing something special because I'm putting on my special clothes.
It's also a reminder that sometimes, a lot of times, those special clothes or whatever you want to call them, like
special clothes,
yeah, they're not comfortable.
No,
and it's like, but so it's a reminder. Like, no, I'm doing this for a reason.
Yeah,
like
I'm not doing it for me.
Yeah, it's you know, sometimes like having a blazer or a jacket of some sort is like it's hot. Like I'm sweating over here. You know, a Mass. I would much rather have a golf shirt on.
Totally.
But.
Boomers and their golf shirts.
I like a golf. I'm wearing.
I love wearing golf shirts, but
yeah.
I don't wear them to the office.
Right.
You know who does? Not going to say.
Wouldn't be honorable.
You're right. It wouldn't be. Number two, fast, hard. So in the book, he has...
Like fasting.
Yeah, like fasting. Not eating food.
Yeah.
He has a very interesting chapter on fasting. And about like, when he says fasting, he means like eating no food.
Mm-hmm.
He's not talking about, you know, and I totally agree. The church now is so, so weak on... what it requires of us, the faithful, when it comes to fasting. And it's just one of those things that personally I think this is why people are not inspired by often the church anymore. Because it doesn't require anything of you. Okay? And if there's somebody who never requires anything great of you, it's an insult because he thinks there's nothing great in you. That's right or wrong. That's the takeaway that you're going to like, at least subconsciously, like, oh, this guy never asks anything hard of me. He obviously doesn't think I can do it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I think that this is just my opinion. I think that the church,
you mean the church's opinion?
I think that the church, it was a mistake to degrade the fasting regulations the way they have. I don't like fasting, okay? And if it was the other way around, I'd probably be complaining about it. Like, oh, I hate fasting so much,
right.
You know? But I'll just mention this because I thought this was really interesting. I never heard this before. He was talking about some of the health benefits of fasting where, you know, after you use up kind of the nutrition that's in your blood, your body starts eating itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When that begins to happen, you're eating your own cells. The cells that get eaten first are the damaged ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you never fast like this, it's a natural, like it's actually a healthy thing that you're, it's a way of purging your body of all these damaged cells. Why are you laughing?
I'm thinking about do you ever watch Cheers?
Yeah.
So, you know, they talked about
I used to watch it a lot when I was younger.
Yeah. He's like, you know, like that's the reason why I drink. You know, alcohol kills brain cells, but it kills the weakest one. So I actually get smarter when I drink.
Brilliant. You know what? I think it's working on this guy.
I think Norm had
he's clearly
a good
got
philosophy.
It. He's got it.
Yeah. Dude, that was
cheers.
So funny.
Cheers to Norm.
Yeah.
So anyway, fast hard. Mm-hmm. Number three, train together. Of all the ways that lifting and boxing clubs could invigorate parishes, one of the most important is the signal it sends to the spirited boys who are dying to see models of muscular Catholicism in the pews.
Wait, lifting and boxing clubs can invigorate parishes?
Sure, you could have a men's club. I mean,
okay.
I don't think that just because you have a lifting club at your parish, it's like therefore going to invigorate your parish. But I think what he means is of all the ways that it could, you know, there's a handful. The one that's most important mm-hmm. is that when you, for those young boys who are of that certain age in your parish, mm-hmm. who really at that moment where, you know, they need a male figure. Dad is obviously the male figure in his life, but every boy gets to the point where that actually they need other male figures.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
They need to see that their dad is a part of actually a fraternity mm-hmm. of men. Mm-hmm. And then that fraternity needs to be there to welcome them in so mm-hmm. that now they know I too belong.
Yep.
Okay.
Totally.
And so I think a weightlifting or like a boxing club or a jiu-jitsu, I mean, that would be awesome for those young boys. So I think that's a great idea. He says, number four, reclaim the vocabulary of the saints. We need to talk about the virtues and show that they're worth striving for.
Just make your language holy.
Yeah.
Talk about that in our book.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's why, like on our show, when we say mass.
Our book, the Holy Mass, but we talk about living beyond Sunday, making your home a holy place.
Yes. I know.
We haven't pushed our
book. We have a book. We wrote a book.
Yeah.
You should buy it.
With our wives. Which is way better.
Totally. But, you know, we don't just say Mass, we say Holy Mass.
Right.
Because...
We don't say the Rosary, we say the Holy Rosary.
The Holy Rosary, right. Yeah. Number five, establish a bigger presence in your parish. It's pointless to call for a revival of muscular Catholicism if we're unwilling to establish our presence on parish councils. So, if you're not willing to step up, then shut up.
Yeah. Dude, I have a hot take that I want to talk about after the show.
Okay.
This.
All right.
Just don't remember. Just don't let me forget.
And number six, renew.
I just said, don't let me remember. Don't let me forget.
You're well. Yeah, I won't.
Yeah.
Renew veneration of the warrior saints. So he says, we need to remember the wholesome effect of old-fashioned hero worship. He puts worship, you know, in quotes. And once again, you kind of mentioned about that earlier, but you need to have a hero.
People to look up to.
And everybody needs, like, I don't think you're never going to outgrow a hero.
No. I mean, you move on from heroes to heroes, like, you know.
Yeah.
But you never outgrow the hero. Like, I always have guys who I look up to in business. I always have guys that I look up to, you know, from a saint perspective, from an intellectual perspective, from just a philosophy perspective, from theologian perspective. Like, there's all these different people in my life that I'm like, man, I want to be around this guy more.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be, you know, a saint who has left his writings, like some of my best friends are saints who are dead, you know, because like I literally try to.
You know, one of my favorite things about those kinds of friends.
They let me talk the whole time.
They never drink any of your whiskey. They let you drink it all. They're just the greatest.
Just the greatest.
Oh, you guys.
But they make you buy it.
That's true.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I'm willing to.
It's a price I'm willing to pay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this is why, like, Joseph Pieper, like, I have this, like, an intimate friendship with him because, like, I have read his writings.
Mm-hmm.
I've read so many of his books that I feel like I know him. Like,
right.
Like I know how he would respond to things.
Yeah. And you do.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think you really do.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's so important. And like, the thing is, if you don't allow if you don't set those heroes up for your children, they're going to pick their own. And you know how they pick their own? From modernity.
Yeah. So, the big
take. Which is not good.
Correct. Not at all.
Just to be clear.
Yeah. I think the big takeaway here is, like, what I got out of the book was sort of like a mental readiness. Okay. You know, It's not like I'm going to run out and join a jiu-jitsu gym.
Because I still want to be able to beat you up.
Like, it did actually make me think about it more than I had in the past. But what I think it made me consider, and this is something we've talked about on the show about different things, is how maybe sometimes something happens, a moment arises, mm-hmm. and you just hadn't really ever thought of what you would do in this moment.
That moment, yeah.
And so this has happened to me many times where I'd kind of freeze because I'm taken aback and caught off guard.
Right.
And then the moment passes and my moment and my window for opportunity, where either I had an opportunity to really speak preach the gospel, say a kind word, to maybe stand up for something, right? Whatever it is, it passes and it's gone. And you can't chase someone down the hallway. It's like, oh, what I should have said to you 2 minutes ago, you know, right. That doesn't work. So reading this book, I think what it did is it just kind of opened my mind up to thinking about being ready and just deciding in advance. Yes, I am the man. I choose to be the man who will say no. Today, I choose to be that man. That when that moment comes, I won't have to think about it because I've already decided. Right. I've already decided who I am. And if it costs me everything, I say yes. I will hold my head up high saying
yes.
Yeah, yes. Double yes. You know, and that for me was big.
Yeah.
Because now I do have a confidence just that when the moment comes, I'm not going to be ashamed. Because those
You're
moments
not gonna be ashamed?
It won't pass me. And I won't have to be ashamed of not having done something. Mm. Like those other moments that I mentioned, but I just wasn't ready. And mm-hmm. Afterwards, I was kind of ashamed that I didn't do the mm-hmm. thing that I wish I had been the man who did the thing I wanted to have done. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so obviously there are many things that might still happen to me where I mess up on, but it is my intent and my earnest desire to be a man of chivalry.
Same.
Same, same. Good. Ditto.
What he said.